and welcome to iVow.
I'm Jenny Prisk and your host for the interviews with the three writers who documented the lives of women peacemakers who lived and studied at the University of San Diego Peace and Justice Institute in 2015. Documenting women's stories is a powerful and provocative undertaking that disrupts the conventional practice of highlighting male leaders. Stories where women are the protagonists offer understanding of the complexities of conflict, exposition of gender discrepancies, and potential avenues for transformation. In 2015, iVow interviewed the four women peacemakers. To learn more about the women, you can visit sandiego.edu. Now we have the opportunity to hear from the women who wrote their stories. For 10 weeks, they were completely engaged with the peacemakers, inviting responses to questions that drew passion, pain, and peace-building solutions from the women. We are delighted to have with us today Gabrielle Clifford, who partnered with Judge Najla Ayoubi from Afghanistan to write her story. Gabrielle, thank you for joining us today.
My pleasure, thank you.
Let me share your bio with our listeners. So Gabrielle Clifford graduated with a Bachelor of Arts with honors in Global Studies, Socioeconomics, and Politics from the University of California, Santa Barbara. She has extensive experience in international relations, conflict resolution, and environmental sustainability. And for 12 years, she has been a freelance writer. Gabrielle, it's been several months since you worked alongside Najla, and we know that she faced considerable personal tragedy and threats from the Taliban in her life. Would you tell us about her and how she has been able to persist through all this with peace building in Afghanistan?
Najla is really one of the most extraordinary women I've ever met. Najla has persisted through a combination of personality and, I believe, interpersonal support as well. She came from a very, very supportive family, a closely knit group. That support has carried her through many of the tragedies that she's seen, including those involving other family members. She also has a determined spirit and a positive spirit, and those have taken her considerable distances as well. There's also, Najla's very much a humanist, and there's acceptance regarding what happens to someone, what happens to you in your life, what happens that we don't have control over, and what do you make of it. So she had told me at one point that particularly when she fled Afghanistan last year, she had said, I, at one point in my life, told myself, I need to be ready for anything. And I told myself that when I fled Afghanistan. And so that, to me, that promise that she made to herself, that declaration that she made to herself, is fairly indicative of Najla's character.
Very, very interesting to learn that about her. Now, you both worked very closely together for 10 weeks as you documented her story. And when you began, you were complete strangers. Now you probably know her better, even than her closest friends. So could you tell us how you established that relationship and then how it evolved and the writing process that you used to capture her story?
Okay, so that's maybe three questions in one.
So how did you establish?
Sure. So the process itself within the Women Peacemakers program here lends itself automatically to coming very, very close within a fairly short period of time, within 3 months. So we're working daily for several hours, one-on-one interviewing to learn their life stories. And so it's hard not to get close. And what was the second part of the question?
Well, just how that kept evolving, because there must have been moments where you would have been shocked or stunned or sad. How did that evolve when those things came up?
It was sort of like any relationship, only fast-forwarded and condensed into a very short period of time. So there were times when we would get mad at each other, or we would both be sad, or, you know, we would both be elated with some, you know, sort of something we'd uncovered in the interviewing process. And I remember the first time I saw Najla really angry, and I was terrified. I was like, oh my goodness, I have pissed off my peacemaker. And I don't know what's going to happen now.
And can we ask, how did it resolve? I mean, did it resolve easily and in a better way than you might have hoped?
It resolved. Do I get an A for honesty here? It resolved. We ended up, I think, cooking omelets later that day, and food helps resolve.
Can solve many of the world's
yes.
problems, I believe.
Yes.
For our listeners who perhaps have already listened to the interviews that we conducted with Najla and with the other peacemakers, mm-hmm. they'll be interested in being able to put these points of view yeah. and these stories together.
Yeah. That incident, actually, when she had become angry at me, was a huge, huge learning for me, in that I realized sort of the cultural context that I was in.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning I'm an American interviewing an Afghan woman, mm-hmm. and our countries are loaded with history. And that had been the topic that had sort of ignited the moment. And so that was a really big learning for me.
That was a very important point that you made, because that did occur to me that you were sitting in what could have been a conflicted situation, sitting down with Najla. Did that have to predicate any of the styles that you chose, any of the ways that you wrote, because of those differences between the countries?
Not in how I wrote, but in how I interviewed.
Could you tell us about that?
I became very cognizant of discussing certain aspects of historical information, and even in bringing up areas in which textbooks, if you will, differ, which is a pretty loaded topic. Mm. And so there was a lot of fact-checking that I needed to do that I chose to not work on Najla with, because it was so loaded. And so I had shifted into a fair amount of independent research to sort of keep the relationship intact and be respectful of Najla and the context.
And I'm sure that had successful outcomes, in that you were able to get her story from her in a way that felt comfortable to her without adding that conflict.
Exactly.
Excellent.
That was the hope, at least.
She shared with you in the story that you've written a lot about her peace-building activism. How do women approach peace-building? Is there an easy answer to
that? That's why we have the program. That's why we're here.
Yes, I guess so. But you mentioned that she's a humanist, and these peacemaking women, even though they're on the front lines of what can be very, very severe conflict and very dangerous conflict, they're humans first. Mm-hmm. So how does a woman gain traction, especially in a male-dominated culture like Afghanistan's is? You know, how do they overcome their fear and their danger in these situations?
In Afghanistan, and after documenting Najla's story, her father was a key figure in her development as a youth, as a young woman, and then as she directed the course of her life. And Najla and I had both discussed her father as being sort of an anomaly. He treated her and her sisters as equals next to their brothers. That may sound simple and obvious, but when set in the context of Afghanistan, which is something that I don't think any one of us sitting here at this table can really fathom and grasp, is no small thing.
Mm-hmm.
And little things and big things. For example, she remembered a story in which she was, maybe in elementary school, and she was performing in a theater, in a play at school. And her father came. He came to watch her, and he came to play in the band. There was a band that was playing, you know, along with the theater. And she was explaining to me that a father would never do that for a daughter. Ever. Maybe for a son acting in one of the theater plays,
mm-hmm.
but she'd never seen any other fathers come and watch their daughters. It was a very strange, you know, he garnered looks from other parents. You know, they're like, why is he here for his daughter?
Mm-hmm.
And then so those small things, which from a childhood development perspective, that's huge, because she's internalizing and her brain is being wired, and she's learning that she has a sense of worth in relation to another male.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that very few women in Afghanistan were getting at that time period. And so, and then to the larger scale things, for example, when her sister, and Najiba, her older sister, there was a man who had approached their father to marry Najiba to his son, which is it's customary.
Custom. Okay? Mm-hmm.
So the fathers discuss it. They make a business deal out of it, and they, you know, discuss whether or not it's a fit for their families, and then the kids go along with it. When Ustad Ayyubi, Najla and Najiba's father, was approached to give Najiba, Ustad went to Najiba directly and said, "So here's what's happening. This guy wants to marry you to his son. What do you think about it? Do you want to get married? Do you like the guy? What do you think? You can do whatever you want. This is your choice. Like, do you want to go to school and university? Like, do you want to leave Afghanistan and go to school? Like, what do you want to do here? It's your choice." I get goosebumps even delivering that because of what I've learned and studied and been immersed in with Afghan culture. That's unheard of, absolutely unheard of. And I can't emphasize that enough.
Mm-hmm.
So Najla grew up with this figurehead that gave her a sense of value as a woman that became her platform.
That certainly is a major difference in what we've, I believe, come to expect in the culture of Afghanistan. Thank you for sharing that.
One more thing I'm just going to tack on to this answer.
Mm-hmm.
Najla, from the get-go, was just determined. She never quit. She really didn't. I think that combination had really set her up to gain traction in what she does.
There's a major lesson here that perhaps behind a very effective female peacemaker, there is also, in the right circumstances, an effective male promoter of that peace.
Perhaps an enlightened.
Yes, an enlightened. That's very correct. How were you impacted by that experience of interviewing and writing Najla's story? Has your present and your future changed as a consequence of that?
Yes. I don't know if I can condense the answers to why.
Do you look at things, think of things, look at the global situation, look at your neighbors, look at yourself, look at your relationships any differently?
Absolutely. I had always had a tendency towards being observant regarding different cultural perspectives and different societal dynamics, whether it's here in Southern California or abroad. But I am much, much more attuned to gender dynamics and much, much, much more sensitive to them because I have seen the extreme degree and been immersed in that. And it's so much different than reading articles about it. Developing that relationship with Najla. For example, so I grew up surfing in North County, and it's a male-dominated sport. I mean, I can tell you so many stories of a very specific demographic of men who have displayed unwarranted aggression towards me as a female in the water. And it was something that was so normalized for me. I took it as being part of the sport. Okay, if I want to keep surfing, I'm just going to have to deal with this, you know? And now, I had had one of those incidences occur after having worked with Najla. And let me tell you, it didn't fly. When the man became really aggressive, I called the police and he was arrested because he actually chased me. It was something that I saw as being a microcosm of a much bigger problem.
Mm-hmm.
And I had been very lenient towards it until now. I think because I had not been so immersed in the extreme side of it, in the extreme side of letting something slide.
Mm-hmm.
What happens mm-hmm. when I don't stand up for myself as a woman? And it was interesting, actually, the other night, because it had happened in the evening at the beach, someone had actually made a comment to me, "Well, you shouldn't be, you know, surfing late after the sun goes down," or something like that. And I said, "Actually, I think I should be able to do that."
You should be able to surf round the clock if you so choose.
I should be able to do this. And the other night I actually watched another woman walking down. She was going out in the evening. And I had this sort of sense of peace, like, she's going to be okay down there. She's going to be all right. That's really what I would hope for the women of Afghanistan and in that region.
It's an excellent hope, one shared by many, I know. You are a writer, you have documented a peacemaker's story, and I think what would be really wonderful next would be to hear,
sure.
if you wouldn't mind sharing, part of your narrative of
sure.
Najla Ayyubi.
So contextually, this is one of Najla's earliest stories. She's probably about 6 years old, and her father had given her a box of pencils that she was just absolutely ecstatic about. It's like a really huge deal for her. And walking home from school, a group of older boys had stolen her pencils. And when I had asked her about, you know, what had prompted her into her activism for women, this was the first story that she had shared with me. "Come, come, little one," Najla's mother said as she wiped her daughter's tears. "It's okay. These things happen sometimes, and you're new to the school." Najla was the youngest girl in her class, and the smallest. "Guljan, what happened?" Najla's father called to his wife from his study, still dressed neatly in a suit from work. When the tears settled, her father listened while she told her story. "I just want to be bigger, Hadad. I just want to be a Zorawa." She used the word for someone very powerful, a warrior who people respected. Najla had been bullied and teased by the bigger kids for as long as she'd been in school. They called her names, took her things, teased her, and now they'd stolen from her. Her father spoke to her very gently, very kindly. "My Najla, you may be little on the outside, but you will soon grow to be bigger. What's more important is that you can become bigger, a Zorawar, on the inside, even when you're little on the outside. Then you'll feel strong and people will respect you." She didn't entirely understand what he meant, but she understood that maybe bigness then wasn't something people only saw on the outside. She understood his encouragement and the way that he seemed to somehow see her as bigger than she saw herself. Najla joined her sister Nadra and her brother Rafi playing in the yard, sheltered by the fruit trees and the houses of her extended family surrounding them. Only half interested in playing, she was still thinking about what her father had said. She lay down in the grass beneath the pomegranate tree and drifted off. Rafi accidentally kicked the ball against her shin, before falling completely asleep, the word Zorawar repeating itself in her mind.
That is a very beautiful, and also a very powerful story of, again, the support from her father and the belief in her. And I particularly love the line about it's not necessarily your physical size that makes you bigger. It's the size of your heart and your actions and your deeds. That was beautiful. Thank you.
Well, because she was so little, she was teased all the time. Mm-hmm. She's still small.
She's still a petite woman.
Very petite.
Yes, she is. Did you have to change your style of writing to capture the essence of Najla's story? And what I mean by different from the way you've written in the past.
I don't think I had to change my style of writing as much as I shifted the focus into more direct experience and imagery, because I really wanted to put the reader in Afghanistan as much as possible. Mm. And I was more attuned to including cultural differences that a westernized reader, it just wouldn't be on their radar.
So. Mm. How can writing, now that you've done all this extensive writing with a peacemaker, how can writing be used as a tool towards peace building?
Well, it's a really good question. And the best answer is the Women Peacemakers Program. The process itself is an intensive interviewing, an intensive immersion into someone else's life and creating documentation from that. And the dissemination of the narratives, particularly, are representative of what's called human rights education, or, you know, some might say feminist education. And inserting feminine-based content into or alongside texts that are historically written by men and for men and are only telling one part of the story is very much a peace-building move, in that it's introducing balance into the conversation, into the historical conversation, into the contemporary conversation. And that's a really powerful tool in peace building.
That's a very fine note on which to conclude our interview today. So once more, our gratitude to you and our thanks for spending this time with us. Thank you, Gabrielle Clifford.
Thank you, Jenny.